Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It's March 14th, 2024, and this is Crime Talk. First, a new prosecutor on the Chad Daybell matter just weeks before the trial starts. Brian Koberger gets shot down by the Idaho Supreme Court. Richard Allen gets a new trial date. Is Scott Peterson actually innocent? Rex Huerman, the alleged Gilgo Beach killer, well, his ex-wife visits him every week and she's giving him the benefit of the doubt. Should you? Can you trust DNA evidence? Well, apparently we all are learning that data is only as good as the analyst. Another contestant for the Mother of the Year, and frankly, this one is just sad. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it.
Hi, lawyer. Lawyer. Lawyer.
Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. I know it seems like it's been, I don't know, a week and a half since I've put up a show. Well, that's exactly what it's been. Why? Because I have been in trial. That's where I have been, and that is why I have not been able to put up a show. And if you've been watching the news, yes, everything got shut down in Denver today because of a snow day. Now, yes, south of town, they got a couple of feet. In the mountains, they got a couple of feet. Yeah, maybe 6 inches where I live, but the roads are nothing but wet. So, once again, the city shuts down when it's not that big a deal. I'm not sure what happened. I know I don't want to sound like that guy when I was a kid, but we just never got that many snow days. And it was never called the night before. It was always called about 6 a.m. in the morning, and you got up early to see if there was going to be a snow day. Now, we've had snow days, and they didn't even get any snow because they call it all so early based upon the hype of the news weathermen. So, anyway, I thought I was going to be able to do a live throughout the week when I got home. Simply not happening. I thought I could. I wanted to do that. But we, the court, the process, we've been starting promptly at 8:30 every day, and we've let the jury go. And then we take care of other matters that need to be resolved. We didn't even seat the jury till almost 6:30 the first night, and we've been there just about that late most nights. And by the time I got home, I still had work to do for the next day. And obviously, although I love doing this and I love all of you, I have a duty to my client to make sure he gets the best representation he can during the trial. And frankly, it wouldn't have been fair to you for me to put out a product that frankly isn't that good. So it looks like I'm going to be gone probably through most of next week because we still have 16 more prosecution witnesses to go. Now, I will try if things change to be able to do a live at night. But like I said, I have a duty to my client, so I have to focus where I must. Anyway, we are on the crumbly jury watch, seeing what the verdict will be there, and we will continue to bring you some trials while I am in trial myself. I'd give you the link, but the judge shut down the streaming because of some issues. Anyway, I can't really say much more about it other than that, but when the trial is done, I'll be able to tell you some more. All right, let's get to the news. First, a new attorney on the prosecution team in the Chad Daybell case just 2 weeks before trial. That's right. The Fremont County prosecuting attorney, Lindsay Blake, has requested that an attorney general by the name of Ingrid Beatty be appointed as the special assistant attorney general to assist in the case that starts on April 1st. Now, this case has obviously been going on for years. I cannot imagine that Ms. Beatty would really be that up to speed in just a few weeks to be of any great assistance in the trial. In the motion that Ms. Blake filed, she stated that she wanted the assistance and the resources of the Office of the Attorney General, and the Attorney General had agreed to assist the Fremont County Prosecuting Attorney's Office in this particular matter of Chad Daybell. Now, according to the motion, the Attorney General office will pay the salaries of its personnel who assist in the prosecution. Now, is this that big of a deal? No. In fact, this is quite common. I can tell you, yes, in the larger jurisdictions, you have an abundance of prosecutors. When you get out to smaller rural counties, they have their prosecutors. They're limited staffed, and sometimes they have limited experience. And it's not uncommon for the Attorney General, who oversees the state, has statewide jurisdiction, to lend resources to these smaller jurisdictions, and they assist in the case just like they are a prosecutor in that jurisdiction. I had a case once down in Durango, and although they had the local district attorney's office, the Attorney General was the attorney that was basically handling the case. The Attorney General's office aren't any better skilled or anything along those lines, but they usually have come up through the prosecutor ranks just as this Attorney General has as well. So it wasn't surprising that Judge Boyce granted the request. Now, Ms. Beatty was also appointed to assist in the prosecution of Brian Koberger. She's a career prosecutor. She is now the lead Deputy Attorney General of Special Prosecutions for the Idaho Attorney General's Office. Now, as you may recall, remember Miss Rachel Smith from the great state of Missouri was brought in to lend assistance because she had extensive death penalty experience. Well, she left. No one's really commented why she would leave right before the big trial that she was hired to do. My guess is it was a personality issue. I don't know. Maybe it's a money issue. I don't know. It's just speculation on my part, and you know how we feel about speculation, but hey, sometimes it's kind of fun to speculate. Anyway, the prosecution will go forward. It always does. What did I tell you? They always find money for justice. Now, for those who have been completely oblivious to the Chad Daybell matter, he married Lori Vallow just 2 weeks after his wife, Tammy Daybell, died suddenly back in October of 2019. And Chad Daybell is charged with conspiracy to commit murder and first-degree murder as it regards to the death of Tammy, his wife, and two of Lori Vallow's kids, 7-year-old Joshua J.J. Vallow and 16-year-old Tylee Ryan. Now, Chad Daybell has pled not guilty back in June of 2021, and we're finally going to have a start of the trial on April 1st. Now, Lori Vallow has already been found guilty of almost identical charges and is serving 3 life sentences without the possibility of parole. And she is currently in an Arizona jail charged with conspiracy to commit the murder of Charles Vallow, her 4th husband, and Brandon Boudreau, her former nephew-in-law. She has pled not guilty. Now, a couple of other things as I was preparing to bring you today's show was I went through and the prosecution has now turned over their exhibit list and their witness list to the defense. But there was something there that I also noticed that maybe a lot of people hadn't noticed, which was the prosecution has filed their response to the defense notice of alibi. So I thought, hey, Scott, you've been in trial, you've been busy. Is there something you missed? Maybe there was something filed long ago. I could not find a notice of alibi filed by Chad Daybell in this particular case. My guess is, like everything in this case, it's been filed under seal. It's been discussed secretly in chambers. Like I said, I've never seen a case tried in chambers like this, and we will have to wait and see. Now, it's not something we didn't expect, but it was just never endorsed, right? So when somebody goes to trial, obviously the prosecution has to prove that it was the defendant that was charged, that they're the ones that did it, not someone who looked like them, not someone using their identity, but they are the ones that committed the crime. Additionally, since this is a charge of conspiracy, and we pretty much assume that Alex Cox will be made to be the bad guy, remember that's Lori Vallow's now deceased brother, it's easy to pin the blame on him. But now, from what we can tell, Chad Daybell also has an alibi. That's right. I can't wait for this trial to begin. My trial will be over, And after a three-week, almost one-month trial, I think I would rather do nothing than to watch other attorneys do the trial. It'll be so relaxing. Anyway, maybe you can join me when we do that. Next, Brian Koberger, another case there in Idaho. Well, as you may recall, his attorneys filed a request for the Idaho Supreme Court to dismiss the charges against him. And the Idaho Supreme Court denied that request. And as you may recall, defense attorneys for Brian Koberger filed an interlocutory appeal to try and see if they could resolve the issue with the Supreme Court as it related to the denial of the motion to dismiss the case against Brian Koberger for irregularities in the indictment process. Now, the judge in the Brian Koberger case denied that motion and frankly heard the term, you can indict a ham sandwich. An indictment is a rubber stamp. Yes, occasionally, and we just saw it recently, where a couple of charges have been dismissed in a high-profile indictment case, but that is rather rare. You can ask for a review in a lot of jurisdictions for probable cause as it relates to the indictment, but normally the courts just say it's a very low standard for probable cause. Would a reasonable person believe that a crime was committed and that the defendant had something to do with it? So that is it. So not surprising that the Idaho Supreme Court denied that request, but they did grant the request to seal the defense motion. And so therefore, nobody can have access to the motion filed by his attorneys. Now, Mr. Koberger is due back in court on May 14th, where hopefully they're going to resolve a couple of issues. The first is going to be, should the trial be moved out of Latah County to a much larger jurisdiction, more than likely Ada County? And as you know, maybe they'll actually set a trial date. A couple of dates have been bantied around, but it looks like it's probably going to be sometime in 2025. All right, next on the docket, Richard Allen gets a new trial date. Now, the trial for Richard Allen was originally set to begin in October of 2024. Guess what? Now that trial is going to take place from May 13th through May 31st. I think it'll actually take a little longer. We'll have to wait and see. Now, as you may not know, Richard Allen is charged with two counts of murder in the 2017 death of Abby Williams and Libby German in Delphi, Indiana. Now, Abby and Libby disappeared on February 13th of 2017 while walking the Delphi Historic Trails. Their bodies were found the following day, about a quarter mile from where they were last seen on the Monon High Bridge. Now, Richard Allen, a married father who worked at the local CVS, was never named as a suspect until his arrest more than 5 years later. Now, he had told officials that he had been on the trails the day the girls went missing, had not looked into that until 2022. Why? Because a clerk that was hired by the FBI didn't put his statement into the correct file, and basically it disappeared. It wasn't until they started saying, we need to go back through everything, that somebody said, hey, we have a suspect here, Richard Allen. He was near the scene. Well, anyway, Allen's arrested. Prosecutors then go through his house with a search warrant, and they say that a gun found at Allen's home matches an unfired 40 caliber round found at the crime scene, and they believe that they can prove that it was cycled through that pistol owned by Richard Allen. Now, Allen's attorneys, who had been kicked off the case by the judge for 79 days before being reinstated by the Indiana Supreme Court, alleged that a white nationalist group known as Odinists killed the girl and claimed early recorded police interviews regarding that investigation were destroyed. The trial date was changed based upon a motion that was filed, and the court granted Allen's previous motion for a speedy trial, which started a 70-day clock in which the trial must start. Now, Richard Allen has two scheduled court appearances on March 18th. Those proceedings are expected to go over several motions issues that haven't been resolved, including the prosecutor's motion to amend the charges and a defense motion to dismiss the case. Now, the attorneys that are representing Richard Allen are fighting back against an accusation that they should be held in contempt by asking the judge to penalize the prosecutors and the police investigators. In a recent motion filed, Richard Allen's defense team levied some accusations that claim that the Carroll County prosecutor, Nicholas McClellan, is dragging his feet and withholding vital information about the case. Now, the accusations go beyond just lethargic response to requests for evidence and extended to even more damning claims of deceit, incompetence, and lies. Now, according to Baldwin and Rossi, the attorneys for Allen, one such claim is the involvement of a Purdue professor whom police investigators originally said was the reason detectives stopped looking into the theory the murders of Abby Williams and Libby German were tied to the occult, and it was some sort of ritualistic sacrifice. Now, the defense has previously laid out its alternative killing theory that absolves Richard Allen of the murder of the girls in place of a more conspiracy-fueled theory tied to this Odinism. Now, both the attorneys, Baldwin and Rossi, said that the Carroll County Sheriff's Department briefly investigated this possibility before claiming a Purdue professor dismissed the possibility by reportedly telling detectives that sticks found allegedly arranged on or near the girls' bodies did not represent runic symbols tied to cult worship, as the defense is now claiming in their defense. Now, while the identity of the Purdue professor whom investigators spoke to was originally stated to have been lost, the attorneys for Allen claim that the police ended up rediscovering the professor's identity in August. Now, the defense team claims that the prosecutor's office told them in September that there had been no luck in identifying who that professor was. Now, Allen's team claims that tapes exist of police interviewing the professor after rediscovering his identity back on September of 2023. Now, Baldwin and Rossi claim that the result of the interview contradicted detectives' earlier claims of the professor's dismissing the cult theory. Allen's attorneys also claim that the police walked back the previous report and instead labeled the professor's ultimate findings as inconclusive, but even this wasn't fully accurate according to Richard Allen's team. Now, when you listen apparently to the taped interview, his attorneys claim the Purdue professor actually stated that the sticks found at the crime scene made it appear as if there had been an attempt to replicate a Germanic rune script. The defense team said the professor only said it was unclear what the intended meaning of the rune script was. So, the attorneys for Allen cite the taped interview with a quote from the professor who said someone could, quote, certainly imagine that this was somebody's idea that when you do human sacrifice, you carve runes. There are some poetic sources that would sort of support that idea that somebody might have come across that scenario, and it seems entirely plausible to me, end quote. So, Allen's attorneys claim the investigators attempted to deceive the reader of the report by implying that the professor disregarded the possibility of the crime scene involving human sacrifice, when instead claimed the professor stated it was an entirely plausible scenario. Now, the defense team for Allen continued to pile on the accusation that the investigation into the murder of Abby and Libby by claiming to uncover maps relating to the geofencing data that implied that investigators gathered phone data of anyone who was within 60 to 100 yards of the crime scene at the time of the murders. Apparently, the attorneys uncovered in files and documents turned over to the defense team was a map made by investigators tracked the movements of people in and around the crime scene on February 13th of 2017 using the phone data. The girls' bodies were found on the 14th. Now, the defense team said in February they requested all the narrative reports related to the map and geofencing data but were told by the prosecutor's office that no such documents exist. The defense attorneys claim they've searched through the discovery information and have yet to find a single police interview with any of the individuals whose phones were tracked as being in the area of the crime scene on February of 2017. They believe that it would be shocking if the owners of these phones were not interviewed when their movements were tracked and then replicated on a map. Yet the defense has not located any interviews of any of the owners of these phones that were monitored. The motion goes on to accuse the prosecution's office of dragging their feet on releasing information requested by the defense team, including numerous interviews with subjects the defense team deems important to their alternative killing theory and evidence such as the data that Libby German's cell phone produced. Now, the phone that famously captured the down-the-hill video is the one at issue. While the defense team did receive the phone data, the attorneys claim they did not get the data until 9 months after the prosecutor should have turned over the evidence and 3 months after the defense team specifically requested the data. Finally, in the motion, they asked the judge, Judge Fran C. Gull, to force the prosecution to go back and look through their files and turn over every shred of discovery they have and explain why certain evidence doesn't exist, such as the deleted DVR interviews that the defense previously sought as part of their case. We'll have to wait and see. The next hearing is set for March 18th in just a couple of days, and the judge will inquire about the contempt of court accusations against the attorneys for Mr. Allen, along with the charges leveled by defense team against the prosecutor, Mr. McClellan. Now, so this case is going to be very interesting. All right, now there's been a couple of cases where I said, hey, this is going to get good. This is going to be interesting. The Richard Allen case is going to be good. All right, the judge hates the defense attorneys, so you know it's going to be good. The defense attorneys are not afraid of the judge. They're not intimidated by the prosecutor. And frankly, the prosecutor seems kind of a little like he's bumbling the whole thing. Clearly not going to be ready to go to trial in just a few months. I just don't see how they're going to be able to do that. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, if the prosecution doesn't produce items in discovery, they don't get to use it at trial. That's just the way it is. And there could be sanctions. A dismissal would be an extreme sanction and highly unlikely, given the fact that the judge hates the defense attorneys in this case. But that is a real possibility. One of the sanctions could be that the defense could use it if it's beneficial to them, but they can't or won't allow the prosecutors to use it. Remember, the prosecutor has a duty to turn over all evidence in the case, and that includes exculpatory evidence. Yes, you would. It's funny. It's really funny. And I'm not saying this happened in my case because I don't want to be talking about the case, but it's funny when all the exculpatory interviews of witnesses, just happened to get deleted. Oh, darn. Shucks. How did that happen? Happens all the time. And it's always the one interview that the witness is hard to find, and it completely contradicts what the prosecution witnesses that the prosecutor is relying upon just happens to get deleted. Happens more frequently than you could possibly imagine, ladies and gentlemen. Going to be a good trial. I can't wait. We may need to go to that one too. Definitely going to have to go to Chad Daybell since we went to Lori Vallow. Definitely going to have to go. Next, is Scott Peterson innocent? Well, Scott Peterson is back in court for a status conference. What status conference, Scott? He's been convicted of murder. He was put on death row. He had his death sentence converted to life without the possibility of parole. What could there possibly be in regards to the Scott Peterson case that was tried over 20 years ago? Well, now Scott Peterson is being represented by the Los Angeles Innocence Project. So, Scott Peterson appeared remotely from a prison while the LA Innocence Project attorneys appeared in court in person. Like I said, 20 years since Scott Peterson was convicted of murdering his pregnant wife, Lacey, and the couple's unborn son, Connor. Well, like I said, the new defense team says that there's evidence that points to Peterson's innocence. And as you may recall, Scott Peterson and many of his family members have always maintained his innocence. So the Los Angeles Innocent Project took up Peterson's case. Now they're requesting to look at some of the evidence used in the trial. And the hearing that was scheduled yesterday was the first time they've all been in court, but they have filed motions for DNA testing, post-conviction discovery, and access to sealed court records. Now, the former requests had been made multiple times, including a testing of a carpet fragment and some blood-stained mattresses found in a burned-out van not far from where Peterson's home was and where his now-deceased wife, Lacey, went missing back in 2002. Like I said, the LA Innocence Project claims that Peterson's constitutional rights were violated, and they want the opportunity to find out if Lacey's DNA is on that mattress. They allege that the technology that now exists wasn't there some 20 years ago, and in their 900-page motion, they ask many questions, for example, whose blood is in the van and why was it burned? The hearing concluded with not much taking place other than setting three more motions hearings. First, a motion to seal the proceedings. That'll take place on April 16th. A hearing on the DNA testing, which is set for May 29th. And a hearing regarding the discovery proceedings, which will take place on July 15th. Scott Peterson doesn't get out of jail or prison. He gets to appear via Zoom. Next, Rex Huerman. That's right, the accused Gilgo Beach murderer. Of course, we give everyone the presumption of innocence on this show. Well, his, ex-wife, going through the divorce process, she apparently is out visiting him and doesn't think that he is capable of the brutal murders that he is accused of. Now, Asa Elrup, who is married to the Long Island architect and has been for now some 27 years, and they have two kids together, apparently goes to see him just about every week at the jail. And she said she's going to give him the benefit of the doubt. She is going to listen to all the evidence and withhold judgment at this time until the end of the trial. Now, she made that statement through her attorney. Now, obviously, everyone is entitled to the presumption of innocence, and obviously we'll give that to Mr. Rex Huerman. The question is, can you? Well, I don't know. The wife, you would think, would be one of the first people to say, hey, is he capable of this? Could he possibly do this? Well, she did file for divorce. Then she did make that movie deal so that she could get like $1 million. Makes for a little better TV. Does it not? Anyway, we'll have to wait and see. That's for sure. But right now, she says she doesn't think he is capable of committing that crime. Next on the docket, can you trust DNA evidence? I'm telling you, been saying this for years, it's not as slam dunk as everybody thinks it is. And I've been spending a lot of time on DNA lately, ladies and gentlemen. I can tell you, what they tell you is not always exactly what it means to be. Just because there's DNA there doesn't mean that it should have actually been calculated because there wasn't enough to make a sufficient call. And then, even though it's there, you have to look at what level of DNA was there. Was it involved in a mixture? What's the major? What's the minor contributor as it relates to the DNA? Yes, all those things, ladies and gentlemen, that prosecutors don't like to talk about. And hopefully that's why you come here, because you get both sides of it. I'll tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly of every case from both sides. That's what we want to do. Now, I've told you about this case that's been brewing here in Colorado, and I found out about it because I was getting letters as it related to cases where my clients were involved over the years. Incidentally, a couple of them that we said don't believe the DNA evidence, but they said, God, how dare you question the DNA? This is Yvonne Missy Woods from the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. She is beyond reproach. She is a well-regarded expert. How dare you question her integrity? you bad, bad defense attorney. Well, guess what? I'm going to read you the statement put out by the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, where they announced the findings of an internal affairs investigation into the former Colorado Bureau of Investigation DNA scientist accused of data manipulation of DNA test results. So, here we go. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. A thorough internal investigation initiated in September of 2023 has revealed that Yvonne Missy Woods manipulated data in the DNA testing process, posting incomplete test results in some cases, and this discovery puts all of her work in question. And CBI is in the process of reviewing all her previous work for data manipulation to ensure the integrity of all CBI laboratory results. Now, CBI brought in a third-party investigative resources to protect the integrity of the inquiry. Public trust in our institutions is critical to the fulfillment of our mission, said the CBI director, Chris Schaefer. Our actions in rectifying this unprecedented breach of trust will be thorough and transparent. Now, a separate criminal investigation initiated late last year in the Woods matter is still underway, and CBI continues to cooperate with our law enforcement partners across the state. In addition to these ongoing efforts, CBI is currently engaged in a comprehensive audit of all DNA analysts to ensure the accuracy and the completeness of the entire catalog of records. The audit will ensure compliance with CBI's policies and procedures and laboratory integrity. CBI will continue reviewing and instituting improvement to lab policies and testing protocols to prevent this type of manipulation from occurring in the future. CBI Forensic Services has maintained regular communication with its accreditation body throughout this entire process, the collaboration and transparency, and has ensured the actions have not affected the CBI's accreditation status. In the course of the exhaustive audit and review process, CBI discovered indications that the analyst employed by the Weld County Sheriff's Office at the Northern Colorado Regional Forensic Laboratory may have also manipulated DNA data. CBI referred this case to the Weld County Sheriff's Office for investigation. This case is separate from the Woods case. So as you can see, ladies and gentlemen, we have the how dare you question the integrity of a CBI analyst. They are beyond reproach. They are just a scientist looking at the data and making interpretations. And after all, her work has been double-checked. After all, the lab and all its accreditations say that, once again, everything is beyond reproach. How dare you question anything? Well, what's the problem here? They're looking at probably having to retry almost 700 cases because of this analyst. And she's been involved in some of the most high-profile cases in Colorado where there was DNA evidence. The state legislature has authorized $7 million for the retrial of some of these 700 cases because of the alleged allegations of Missy Woods, who maintains her position that she did nothing wrong. But obviously, CBI doesn't believe that story. The question now is she going to be charged? And I'm going to go back and look at this, but if you lie in a homicide case and somebody goes to prison for that, my recollection is there's a statute that says in Colorado that you can then be charged with a class one felony, which is life without parole, because we don't really want people perjuring themselves when they do that, particularly in a homicide case. So ladies and gentlemen, next time you hear about this, and let's just get honest, this finally got called out in one case through the Colorado Bureau investigation. And through that, they find another analyst in another lab that apparently did the same thing. Do you really think this is the only place that this is taking place? Come on. No, it's not. Just saying. Just saying. And just so we're clear, the report stated that omitted material facts in official criminal justice records and that records were tampered with DNA testing results by omitting some of those results, which violated CBI's code of conduct and the Colorado Bureau of Investigation laboratory policies, ranging from data retention to quality control measures. Like I said, in September of 2023, CBI became aware that DNA samples testing performed by Missy Woods, a 29-year veteran of the CBI crime lab, may have deviated from standard operating procedures. They're calling these anomalies. Anyway, on October 3rd of 2023, she was placed on administrative leave and the internal investigation began. She performed no additional laboratory work and retired November 6, 2023, I'm sure to spend more time with her family. As part of the investigation, CBI has collaborated with members of the Kansas Bureau of Investigation to ensure an independent evaluation of the scientific and technical issues involved. And going back to October of 2023, the CBI's quality management team, yes, the same team that apparently never questions Miss Woods in her work. That's right. So 652 cases, I think I said 700, 652 have been identified as affected by Woods' data manipulation between 2008 and 2023. A review of her work is going back to 1994 all the way up to 2008. I wonder what they'll find then. Anyway, the CBI's DNA forensic team identified the following types of manipulation in Woods' work. She deleted and altered data that concealed Woods' tampering with controls, deleted data that conceals Woods' failure to troubleshoot issues within the testing process, failed to provide thorough documentation in the case record related to certain tests performed, and these manipulations appear to have been the result of intentional conduct on the part of Ms. Woods, according to the Internal Affairs report. Now, the review did not find that Woods falsified DNA matches or otherwise fabricated DNA profiles. She instead deviated from standard testing protocols and cut corners, calling into question the reliability of the testing that she actually conducted. And according to CBI's policy and procedures, Woods should have conducted additional testing to ensure the reliability of the results of these cases. And of course, the CBI has a high degree of confidence in its analysts and laboratory integrity, and the level of the ongoing scrutiny is high. And based upon the results of this investigation, CBI is evaluating and implementing processes and procedural changes that will enhance the integrity of the process. And CBI is going to provide more information regarding these changes once that process is complete. Hey, nothing to worry about here. Don't worry about it. Because this is an active internal investigation, though, they cannot provide further information at this time. Now, can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen, the amount of evidence that would have to be presented for the CBI to throw their wonder child of 29 years under the bus? It has to be overwhelming. And I'm sure we're going to get to find out soon because, like I said, letters are going out and I got a couple of them. So we'll get to find out and see what she did. The reality of it is bad stuff. Bad, bad stuff. You have a expert witness that was given this credibility to say, yes, this is a match. The evidence is overwhelming. Convict this person. And people went to prison for that. Someone should be held accountable criminally. Just my thoughts. What are yours? Next, because this is just sad, but the reality of it is it just shows you got to get a license for everything, to drive a car, get a fishing license, get permission to dig a hole in your backyard, but they let anyone be a parent. Well, a Florida woman has been arrested for trying to sell her daughter for $500 outside a store and then abandoning the child when confronted by an employee at the store. So police allege in their affidavit for the arrest warrant that Jessica Woods was loitering around an H&R office in Florida, and her 18-month-old daughter was with her and had a bruise on her face. This is back on March 5th. Well, one of the employees there at H&R Block told police that Woods had first come to the establishment about 7:40 p.m. on an evening because her baby had soiled a diaper. Woods used the H&R Block restroom to change the child, and the worker there witnessed that the mother hit the daughter with her elbow and then spanked the child. This is all according to the affidavit. The next morning, the employee arrived back at the office and found Miss Woods sleeping on top of the outside air conditioner unit, and the 18-month-old child was sleeping near her in a shopping cart without a blanket. The employee confronted the mother and asked if she and the child needed any help. Woods demanded money, and when the employee said that she would buy her items to help her out, but she wouldn't give her cash, Woods became enraged and threw her child. Later in that same day, around 2 p.m., the employee there at H&R Block said that Woods crossed the busy street and went over to talk with her. She put the baby down on the ground near the grass. The 18-month-old began to crawl towards a busy road, according to the arrest affidavit. The worker then picked up the baby, and at that point, Woods allegedly offered to sell the baby for $500. Now, according to the arrest affidavit, the woman said that she would not give her any money. Woods then replied that you can then have the child. When the employee of the H&R Block refused to buy the toddler, Woods walked away and left the child there. The worker took the child into the H&R Block and cleaned her up, and the mother never returned for the child. The employee of H&R Block then took the 18-month-old child to the Palataka Police Department and explained what happened. And according to the police department, Miss Woods is known to be around in the area quite frequently, and they were familiar with her. Now, the officers and the victim advocate took care of the child, and the child has been placed in foster care, thank goodness. Now, Woods has been charged with child abuse, child neglect, abandonment of a child, and that's right, selling a minor for money. She was arrested on March 7th and transported to the county jail. Her bond was set at $255,000. And obviously, she can have no contact with her child. She remains in custody. Sad situation. Obviously, you never want to see a child put in that situation at all. Hopefully, the mom, while she's in custody, we don't know this for sure. Maybe she has some mental health issues. Maybe she has some drug, alcohol issues. Hopefully, she can get the help that she deserves. And maybe one day, if she can get her act together, she can be reunited with that child. But as of right now, I think most people agree she is not fit to take care of that child. And finally today, our dumb criminal of the day. A Wisconsin man who, get this, legally changed his name to D's Nuts, D-E-E-Z hyphen N-U-T-S, has been arrested for a domestic violence situation. Now, D's Nuts Kroll was busted yesterday evening for battery and disorderly conduct, which are misdemeanors, and he's been arrested by the Green Bay Police Department. Now, D's Nuts appeared to be highly intoxicated in his encounter with the police, and the police allege that D's Nuts punched and shoved his daughter and tangled with her boyfriend at the residence where they all reside. Now, according to the complaint, Mr. D's Nuts accused his daughter of failing to do small household chores and care for the animals. At one point, police alleged that D's Nuts, who was unencumbered by a shirt, pulled out a BB gun that resembled a pistol. D's Nuts was booked into the Brown County Jail and was released after posting a $1,000 bond. Now, apparently, D's Nuts was originally given his government name or his birth name of Derek Kroll. He changed it to D's Nuts in 2011 with only one E, and then 6 years later changed it to add the extra E, so it's D-E-E-Z hyphen Nuts, claiming it wasn't spelled right, apparently. Anyway, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You just can't make this stuff up. All right, I hope you enjoyed the show. It was great to get back to do this. Like I said, I wish I could do this, and I think what we got to do, ladies and gentlemen, we have to come to some sort of agreement. If I do this like on a daily basis for multiple hours a day, would you watch? Let me know. let me know. Maybe I'm just tired because trials can do that. A one-week trial can do that, let alone one that could potentially go for a month. Anyway, when I get done with this, I need to decide what I'm going to do. And maybe, just maybe, it'll depend on what you guys also tell me what I should do. So any advice you have would be greatly appreciated. All right, thanks for watching. We'll see you next time, hopefully soon. And remember, that's right, the Constitution does matter.